Our reading this morning is from Muhammad Ali. We all have the same God. We just serve him differently. Rivers, lakes, ponds, streams, oceans all have different names, but they all contain water. So do religions have different names, and they all contain different truths expressed in different ways and forms and times. It doesn't matter whether you're a Muslim, a Christian, or a Jew. When you believe in God, believe that all people are part of one family. If you love God, you cannot just love some of his children.
Out here on the square most every day, gotta get out of the shelter. And I see you walk by in your shiny black shoes. I smile and offer you a paper. But somehow your eyes will always shift away, no doubt to something more compelling. Or maybe you remember that you should call Joe and see exactly what he's selling. But I am not invisible. No, no, no. I am standing right in front of you. Oh, not invisible. I am a man like you. When the weather turns warm, I go out, find my friend. He's always sitting in his wheelchair. I ask him if he'd like to go out for a ride somewhere out beyond this nowhere. Then as we push across the street, staying centered in the crosswalk, a car with a blaring horn cuts by so close, we can smell the burning rubber. But I am not invisible, no, no, no. I am standing right in front of you. Oh, I am not invisible. I am a man like you. My boyfriend's unhappy, but it's not his fault that I'm pregnant and he's helpless. Does what he can, but there just ain't no work except to stay clean and sober. I'm as thin as a wraith except for my child pushing out across my waistband. And I let most anyone rub on my belly like a shaman's magic talisman. But I am not invisible. No, no, no. I am standing right in front of you. Oh, not invisible. I am a mom like you. But I have lost my way, have no roadmap to lead me home. so frightened that if no one sees, I'll disappear. So please, friend, take my hand. Maybe we can find the promised land, where it's warm and quiet and full of light. Don't let me go. I'm not invisible as I'm standing here right next to you. No, not invisible. I am alive. Just like you.
I'm a homeless man. Some call me a bum. Some don't call me anything. They pretend not to see me as I may be napping on the sidewalk, and they just walk over me like I don't exist, like I do not matter. I was not aware that the mere fact I do not have a roof means I don't have a soul. I did not know I do not matter. But I do. I have feelings, just like you. I have dreams, just like you. And I bleed just the same as you do. So you see, we're not so different, you and I. We all occupy the same blue ball and live under the same blue sky. We all cry sometimes. We all laugh sometimes. We are, after all, only human. Those words were written by Matt Coffey, a homeless man in his 30s who lived outside year-round in a narrow swath of woods behind the big box stores in a local Portland strip mall. I say lived because after 5 years of living outdoors in a shelter reinforced by found pallets, found lumber, found doors, and found windows, complete with a chicken coop and a garden. After 5 years, too many other homeless people had found Matt's raw-edged urban Eden, and the property owners had had enough. When Matt was alone, he could fly under the radar and keep himself as close to invisible as possible. But that all changed when the others moved in. And before too long, they were given a week to vacate their campsites by the police. Matt hoped to sneak back in after the deadline, but the camps were totally demolished. Not cleaned up, mind you, just destroyed. The Portland Press Herald, which is our local newspaper up a little ways north, gave this situation prominent press, not because of the chronic homeless people like Matt, but because a cute 5-year-old girl whose parents had come north to Maine with a false promise of housing and employment had gotten caught in the crossfire between the owners and the homeless and was in danger of being out on the streets and not safe in school where she belonged. Matt is neither 5 years old nor terrifically cute. So although he was quoted in the Press Herald article, he was not featured. But then again, that might very well have been his choice. Many of the chronic homeless want to remain unseen, camped at the edges of society, or temporarily inhabiting old port doorways until the first rays of sun ricochet off the brick storefronts and rouse the sleepy streets to the hustle and bustle of commerce. It's one of the many contradictions with the chronically homeless. The desire to remain safely unseen while sleeping outside, but yet wanting so desperately to be acknowledged as a part of the greater community and not just some piece of errant flotsam to be discarded. I can't begin to answer that contradiction. I can only try and sit as comfortably as possible in its dissonance and hold it lightly enough that the dynamic tension doesn't scorch my fingertips. As Lisa said, my name is Pastor Jeff Logan. I'm an interfaith minister and one of four co-pastors at Grace Street Ministry, which is a homeless outreach street ministry in Portland. Our really deceptively simple mission is to see amidst the chaos, the pain, and the exhaustive struggle for basic survival, to see not only the common humanity of the people on the street, but also that small glimmer of the divine that continues, in spite of everything, to find its way through the narrow cracks and the thick walls of the everyday. In the 2+ years I've been working as a street minister, I've had a rather steep learning curve. Fortunately, I've had demanding but very inspirational teachers, and I'm actually not talking about my fellow pastors, who are quite amazing. I'm talking about the homeless people themselves. I remember one man in particular. When I first met him, he was sitting outside the day shelter courtyard, sitting in his wheelchair, his body eroded after years of physical labor, still hopeful that his disability will come through finally and he can get housing. I remember him telling me about a woman at a storefront church he goes to down the block that has such severe Parkinson's tremors that they've taken all the joy out of her life. And he said to me with great sincerity, if there was one thing that he could do, it would be to take those tremors away from her and to bear them in his own body. Sadly, a couple of months later, I facilitated his memorial service in the Wayside Soup Kitchen on a Tuesday afternoon. He just received his disability. But ironically and tragically, he died in his sleep at the Milestone Shelter, which is the shelter you can go to if you're drunk, at the age of 57, his heart having finally given out after years of alcohol abuse. I'm still heartbroken when I think of Danny, but I do take comfort in the fact that he's free from a life on the street. And I find incredible inspiration in the compassion and the generosity he showed toward others when he himself had so very, very little to call his own. And I've begun to learn that in this world on the edges, where everything cuts so close to the bone, the lines between joy and despair, comfort and affliction, even life and death, are surprisingly thin. Just a couple weeks back, I was holding hands with a young man and his father, whose brother and son had died exactly 1 year ago, bleeding out on a bench outside the day shelter, as his brother desperately followed the 911 instructions to provide CPR until the ambulance came. The young man looked at his watch while his father and I stood quietly, and at exactly the moment of the young man's passing a year ago, we held hands and we prayed. All while the usual chaos swirled around us, the drugs, the drinking, violence. It's a world that prompted a woman at the shelter to ask me one day whether the fact that her Bible had fallen open randomly to Ezekiel 14, where God has turned away from his people because of their idolatry, meant that addiction was a form of idolatry that would keep the addict apart from God. Yes, I get these questions at homeless shelters. I said, I don't think so. I said, addiction is a disease of the body, not of the spirit, and that after all, God was needed more for those lost souls than perhaps anyone else. At least that's sincerely what I hope. It's what I believe. In order to understand the work that Grace Street actually does, I'm thinking it might be useful for you to know what we actually do week in and week out. Well, every Tuesday and Thursday, one of the pastors will walk the main street of Portland, find people who seem to be homeless, see what small needs they may need, and make sure they know what services are available. We then spend an hour and a half up to three or even four at the day shelter, the Preble Street Resource Shelter, talking to the folks there and again trying to help with the small things that our modest means can provide. And then we have our street service. Every Sunday on the street corner across from the Wayside Soup Kitchen, rain or shine, where we share prayers and communion next to the sacred trash can and the holy chain link fence. And although we do provide a clean pair of socks, a shoes, a blanket, a coat, sometimes a tent or a sleeping bag, or as Lisa said, the gold standard, the $5 Dunkin' Donut gift card, the get-out-of-jail-free card out on the street. But the importance of what we really do is rooted in the fact that we're a pastoral presence in this very material world. Unlike everyone else, we're not there to unearth hidden assets and demand retribution. We're not there to pathologize and treat. We're not there to even solve problems. We're just there to see and to celebrate people's basic humanity, to pray with them if they want, and to give them a sense of the sacred in the midst of the noise and the drugs and the desperation. Most of my most personally rewarding moments have come not when someone is pleased with a pair of boots or a hoodie, but when someone comes up to me to share a rare moment of joy. Pastor, I've got housing. Pastor, I've got enough money to go home. Pastor, I'm still sober. Pastor, they're not going to take my child away. Pastor, I am getting the hell out of here. And in all these razor-thin moments that span the abyss, I have slowly begun to understand why Jesus may have spent so much of his time with criminals, prostitutes, and the poor. Maybe it's because there are no distractions, no online buffer between the struggle of our mortal existence and our deep-seated desire to find meaning in our lives. Value on the street exists in very simple things: food, shelter, love. It can get perverted at times with the drugs that numb the senses and allow the worst angels to take control. But much of the time, the need and the longing is so clear and so immediate that the face of the divine is all the more present. Just beyond the veil at the edges of sight, or a little past the last existential bellow that cries out for spiritual comfort, but which gets someone kicked out of the shelter for that day. The symbol that we all wear in this work is this very simple cross. It's the cross of Ecclesia Ministries, which is the umbrella group in Boston that is the overall uniter, as it were, of all the homeless ministries across the country. Every year they have a big gathering somewhere in the country in which people from as far as Oregon and Washington and on the West Coast and the East Coast and everywhere in between comes together to talk about the work we do. As I've begun to grow into this ministry, this cross has taken on different meanings over time. It will always remind me of the other people across the country who are doing this work, work that can seem so very lonely when you're in the middle of it and you're faced with so much need and such few resources. And it will always remind me of that guy in sandals who walked the earth 2,000 years ago. Extraordinary man, arguably the first street minister. And I say man because to me, Jesus is not a god. He was a man who understood that God wanted us to build the kingdom of heaven here on earth. It's not about pie in the sky. It's about here and now and the incendiary possibility of living a life based on the golden rule. And for that, this revolutionary peasant from Galilee was arrested, tortured, and assassinated by the Roman Empire. He was also a man who understood, like the Buddha and countless others, that the truth of human existence is the search for meaning and not the acquisition of material goods. It has nothing to do with that enormously annoying bumper sticker, "He who has the most toys at the end wins." I've seen it. No, it has everything to do with what Jesus said in the Gospel of Matthew. "Truly I tell you, just as you did to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me." In addition to these important meanings of this cross, I also wear it as a powerful symbol of the interface of the mortal and the material with the sacred and the eternal. Because at its simplest level, the cross is the intersection of two axes, the horizontal and the vertical. The horizontal one represents the connection to each other in this material plane of existence, one that unites us in our collective struggle to find food and shelter and the love of friends and family. And then there's the vertical axis, our connection to the divine. And with this community struggling on the edges, it's vitally important to remind people of the vertical axis because it's simply not part of the everyday struggle to survive when you're homeless. But in spite of that rarity, there's a beautiful simplicity to this imagery that is very powerful on the street, where keeping things simple is the only way to reach people where they are. And by reminding them of their relationship with the divine, it can bring us right up against that feeling of unworthiness that so many of us struggle with when contemplating a relationship with God. "I'm a drug addict. I have mental illness. I've made terrible choices. I'm a lousy parent. Why would God have any interest in me?" I'm sure we've all asked some version of that question. But I always go back to good old St. Francis, who said, "I've been all things unholy. If God can work through me, he can work through anyone." And with that reminder of our potential relationship with God and our absolute worthiness to enter into such a relationship regardless of our flaws, sprouts the small flower of hope, breaking gently through the concrete next to the chain link fence where we break bread with our brothers and sisters. Maybe it'll be all right. Maybe right now, this is enough. And with hope comes the dangerous and revolutionary possibility of being of use in the world. Not in the standard sense of accumulating material possessions and wealth, but in the spiritual sense of walking through the difficulties of life with the divine perched on your shoulder, always aware of the vertical, of the direct line to God. But it does not end there. It ends with the day-to-day passion play of the horizontal, with our connection to each other and the search for love and meaning and the ongoing work of building the kingdom of heaven here on earth. I often end the street service with the words of St. Teresa of Avila: "Christ has no body now, but yours. No hands, no feet on earth, but yours. Yours are the eyes through which Christ looks compassion into the world. Yours are the feet with which Christ walks to do good. Yours are the hands with which Christ blesses the world. And by this, what I mean is that the changes that we need to make will not come from on high. We can gather strength from whatever manifestation of the divine speaks to us, but then we must take those teachings and plant them in the fertile ground of our communities. No teacher will do it for us. It's up to us. We have that power. We are the living hands of the ineffable. And if this all seems possible, as we stand on a circle on a windswept street corner, if it rings true even for just a few minutes or a day, we've made a small yet fundamental and profound improvement in the lives of the discarded, the marginalized, the demonized, the invisible. And isn't that just what we are charged to do? Truly, I tell you, whatever you did for the least of my brothers and sisters, you did it to me. And when we do it right, in a small way, with a pair of socks, a cup of coffee, and a prayer for deliverance, on that street corner, on that balmy Sunday, we are midwives to the miraculous.